And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's going on? DJ and Bucky back in California after a fun week there in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. Buck, have you recovered? Have you recovered yet?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I'm on to the next. I think the big thing when you come away from the combine is trying to separate what you saw in Indy and compare it to what you saw on tape, and not to kind of swing too far in one direction or the other based on what you saw during the workout. We've talked about this repeatedly, how it's really important as much as we can to put the pen down before you get to the combine, because if you haven't done full evaluations prior to the combine, then what happens is your mind can become clouded. So now when you're looking at tape of DK Metcalf, because he registered at 4.33, you kind of write down in your notes, oh, he's fast, he's explosive, and it just kind of clouds the evaluation. So I think what we have to do is when everyone is kind of going, hey, this guy's a great player based off this workout and the three cone and all this other stuff, is pop on the tape and really stick to what your initial assessment was based off the tape. Because more times than not, your gut reaction off that initial feel, what we call it, blink scouting, off of Malcolm Gladwell, normally when you blink scout, it kind of stays true to it.
All right, we're gonna have a chance to get into everything we saw at the combine, what we like, what we didn't like. There's interesting news yesterday that broke as we're recording this. Yesterday, Charlie Casserly came on our air and talked about some feedback he'd got from Kyler Murray's interviews at the combine. So we're gonna touch on that. I have a new mock draft that's posted on NFL.com. You can find that at NFL.com/Daniel Jeremiah. You can check out that mock draft. We'll go through a couple of those picks that are interesting. And then we're going to roll your interview you did with Ryan Day, head coach at Ohio State, who offers tremendous insight on a guy who's in competition with Kyler Murray to be the first quarterback selected there in Dwayne Haskins for the Buckeyes. So jam-packed episode today, Buck.
Jam-packed. I'm excited. Let's get right to it, man. Let's not waste time. Let's get to it.
Let's jump in here. Let's start first of all. I want to go to what you just said about the combine. I'm just going to give you my one thought there on how you I would say digest the combine. And the way I look at it, Buck, is if what I see at the combine workout matches what I've seen on tape and what I've taken my notes on, they're in bed. They put them to bed. It's over. Like, mm-hmm. I know exactly who this is. It's a DNA match. The tape and the workout's a DNA match. Now, when there's something that doesn't match up, like, let me give you an example. N'Keal Harry, who I question his speed on tape, and he goes out and runs in the 4.5s, which I did not anticipate. What's that going to do? That just drives you back to the tape, and you're going to see, okay, am I missing something here? But at the end of the day, it's going to be that tape that determines where he ends up sliding. All this is doing with a workout is pushing you back to the tape to do a little deeper study.
That's what it should be. It should always do that. I mean, obviously, you spend all that time in Baltimore. When I talk to the guys from there, way back to Art Perkins and the Shaq Harris's
AP,
and stuff, they always talked about the tape is the DNA. Don't deviate too far from the tape. It reveals who a player really is. And so the combine workouts can get you excited. They can maybe make you a little disappointed in somebody that you're really hanging your high hopes to. But if you go to the tape and you watch them, and you watch them over a number of games, if that same guy that shows up, the one that you wrote down in your notes, I think you have to stick to it. You got to be kind of stubborn when it comes to that, because we're grading players and we're projecting them on how they play, not on how they work out. And I think we have to make sure there's a little balance in terms of the projection versus the production. And that is the debate that everyone has to kind of have with themselves as they're going forward, because the athleticism will make you project a little farther out, but the production, the proven performance on tape, is more in line with how guys typically produce at this level.
No doubt. I'm with you 100%. Now, we're going to have a video up. You can find that at NFL.com/MTS video, where we will give you a couple guys we thought really helped themselves and a couple guys that maybe have some work to do. Let's put it that way, some work to do at their pro day to kind of recapture their draft momentum. So be on the lookout for that. But I say we jump in right now to Charlie's comments yesterday on Kyler Murray. To quote it here, it was the worst report I've ever heard on a top-ranked quarterback. So he had talked to a couple teams that had interviewed Kyler Murray, and to summarize it, said he wasn't good on the board, I believe with some leadership questions. There was a lot of concern with how he interviewed with those teams. Now, I followed that up after having seen that report, and the other hidden information in there, which I thought was the headline, which kind of got lost in the shuffle, was that Charlie also said Josh Rosen was – he talked to a team that confirmed Josh Rosen was being shopped. So – if I'm doing some math here, Buck, if Josh Rosen's being shopped, that means the Arizona Cardinals are taking Kyler Murray. There's nobody else they're taking there. He would be their quarterback, not taking Dwayne Haskins there. And that would be the ultimate. That's the ultimate shocker. They do all this and they took Dwayne Haskins. No, it would be Kyler Murray. So at that point in time, am I crazy? It doesn't matter how he interviewed with the other teams.
To be honest, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how he interviewed with all 32 because typically you only need one team to really fall in love with you. And most of the time, that love affair starts when you start watching them play and then you go back and watch the tape and then you project how they fit into your system and then you go and you cross-reference it. And I think for the listeners, it's really important because a lot was made of Charlie's comments. And look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Charlie Kastner and what he's been able to do in the league. But that's just a snapshot of an evaluation because the 15-minute interview doesn't fully encapsulate all the work that you do on a player. And so to kind of let people know what we do as just an area scout, what you would do is I'm going to talk on the school call. I'm going to talk to the strength coach. I'm going to talk to the trainer. I'm going to try and find another administrator somewhere in there to talk to. I'm going to talk to the pro liaison who is a coach on the staff. In a casual manner, I may talk to some teammates to ask about a handful of players, like that are on the squad and how they interact and who is the leader, et cetera. Then when we go farther down the line at an all-star game, I may talk to an opponent. I may talk to some other guys to give me some perspective on that player. In the meantime, I've also watched him in a game, particularly when it comes to quarterback. And when we go to quarterbacks, all quarterbacks should be evaluated live, not only so you get a sense of their arm talent, but so you can watch them interact with their teammates. Are they all by themselves on the bench and the rest of the team is down on the end? Are they engaged? Is a steady dialogue between the quarterback and the running back and the offensive line and the wide receivers? I am really trying to paint a full picture. And then when we get to this part of the year, yes, we have the 15-minute sit-down at the combine. But meanwhile, we're also contacting high school coaches, high school teachers. We may even go below that depending on what is in their background. And then we're trying to get all of this information to take back to the team. So then when we have our meetings in April, the final meetings, that's when we begin to kind of put all of the finishing touches on the background. So even though Charlie can talk about the board work or whatever, there is so much work to be done that it's too early to make a hard assessment or assertion on what Kyler Murray is because we haven't done enough research on him.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I can remember, though, and I know you've had the same situation, Buck, when I've been on teams where we were picking in the bottom of the first round, in the late 20s. And we've brought in players to the combine interview process that we knew were going to be top 10 picks. The players knew they were going to be top 10 picks. And
no
to say
interest.
They were disinterested
no
would
interest.
Be an understatement.
Absolutely.
Right? They come into your room and they just kind of go through the motions. They're not happy to be there. I mean, I can remember even we had Jonathan Vilma coming in. We brought him into our facility for one of our 30 visits. And I remember I was a first, second-year guy, so I had to go – I pick up Jonathan Vilma at the airport, who, by the way, if you get to know him, he's a great dude. He's transitioned, from a wonderful playing career, and he's doing a great job at ESPN. But I can remember picking him up at the airport and going, like, what are you guys doing? Why are you wasting my time? Like, I'm not going to be there when you pick. You know what I mean? Like, so – and while I would say this about Kyler Murray, if he wasn't prepared for those other interviews, that's not being professional. That's not professional. Now, what it is it's understandable – if you've been told through the grapevine that you are going to be the number one pick of the Arizona Cardinals and you feel like this is, why am I doing this? Understandable, yes, but it's not professional. And there is something to that. I'm not going to say what you get out of that report is useless. No, there's things that would concern me when you hear those reports. That's how I draw the distinction. Professional, no. But understandable, I can kind of see how that could happen.
Yeah, I can see that how that could happen. Now, look, if I was coaching Kyler Murray or any prospect, I'll say, everyone, give him your best shot because you just don't know what's working behind the scenes.
Yes.
However, this is a little different with the Cardinals holding the number one pick. There being a lot of connections between Kyler Murray's representative, who also represents the head coach. I mean, there's some extenuating factors that certainly could impact how Kyler Murray would walk into the Cardinals room versus walking into some of the other rooms. However, you just don't know. So you always want to put your best foot forward. You always want to present and convey that you are not only professional, but you're the face of the franchise, that you are ready to kind of handle all the responsibilities that go with that. But, you know, then I heard some of the stuff about the board and getting on the board and what they asked him. And depending on how those questions were asked, were they asking him about his own offense? Were they asking him about the protections that maybe he did or didn't have to direct? All of those things, it's kind of subjective because we don't know the nature of the questions. I would like to dig down a little deeper and kind of figure out what it was he was asked when it came to like the IQ and the board work and football concepts, because in all honesty, when I do the research and I've looked at like what Kingsbury said about the air raid in the past and what Graham Harrell and other guys have said about that in the past, it's a pretty simple Simon offense. They take a lot of the pressure off the quarterback and they try and allow them to play fast and effective and free. And so maybe it's not necessary depending on like to have all of this stuff, all of this knowledge and IQ when he hasn't been taught that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him going forward. I do real quick want to touch on what team would make the most sense if they were going to go in the Kyler Murray direction. I know there's several teams you could throw out there for Josh Rosen. To me, the Washington Redskins, when you look at the makings of a really good offensive line, some good pieces in place, when you've got Trent Williams there, when you've got Sheriff there, those are two really good building blocks to build around. Let's see, be a little bit aggressive in free agency, go get another guard. You've got a chance, I think, to have the ability to protect Josh Rosen. And we've seen Josh Rosen at UCLA. They struggled to protect him. When they did protect him, Buck, he can carve you up. Very similar, and I compared him to Haskins to Rosen, and then I think they're a little bit dependent on what's in front of him. But the Washington Redskins, to me, makes sense for Josh Rosen. That would be a place where he could plug in, and I think he could have some success.
Okay. Are you giving up the 15th overall pick for Josh Rosen?
Me personally, yes, I would.
Okay,
because they don't have a quarterback. And this is a young, cost-controlled quarterback, costing you nothing for 3 years, who's got tremendous ability. I mean, I'm not going to punt on my evaluation from last year, Buck, where I say he's a second. He was second-best quarterback in the draft last year, in my opinion.
Now, no. I get that.
15th pick 1 year later for nothing? I mean, it cost me financially nothing.
No, it doesn't, because he's only owed $6 million over the next 3 years, which absolutely is cost control. The bonuses and all that other stuff, guaranteed money, the Cardinals have already paid out. They do that. So from a cost control standpoint, you're absolutely right at 15. The interesting thing, so when this kind of broke out, like I text maybe five or six different executives all over the league, AFC, NFC, quarterback needy teams, guys that already had their quarterback. And DJ, I'm going to be honest with you, man. The consensus, like, was somewhere in the third to fourth round range. I couldn't get anybody to go up beyond that. Now, and I think what people have to do is they have to rewind it back a year. Josh Rosen was very, very polarizing during the pre-draft process. And, I mean, I would say he was polarizing through no fault of his own, really, like because he likes to know the why and he has a prickly personality. He didn't have any really strong character stuff. But there are some people that never really got on the Josh Rosen train because they didn't want to take that on. And what could be hurting Josh Rosen and his trade value now, those initial evaluations, like if you weren't a Josh Rosen fan, you're not going to jump up and be a Josh Rosen fan right now. You're not going to jump in and say, oh, I need to give up a first-round pick. However, some teams could see him as the ultimate value team. So you talk to value player. So you talk about the Washington Redskins. Maybe even the New England Patriots because they already have their quarterback in place and maybe they don't like what's available to them. There's some other teams that need quarterbacks down the line. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, think about all the teams that have old quarterbacks. They all could be in the mix. And so Josh Rosen has some value. I think that value hasn't been kind of thrown out there also because the Cardinals haven't done a really good job of kind of keeping the cards close to the vest. So you're always going to get a lowball deal from anyone that is inquiring about his services.
Yeah, no, look, it'll be interesting if he is truly on the market, see what teams get into that hunt there. All right, another piece of news here before we get to this mock draft. Ian Rappaport says the Chiefs working on a record-setting deal for Tyreek Hill. Your thoughts, Buck?
Whew. I mean, look, he's been super productive. I mean, the touchdowns are off the chart. I think four or five touchdowns on kickoff returns, punt returns. He's had another 29 touchdowns. He's been remarkable in terms of putting the ball into paint. And then the last couple of years, we have seen him kind of emerge as the number one receiver in what is some teams are saying is the most explosive offense in football. So he's going to get a lot of attention. The thing that we're looking at is his teammate is kind of to blame for where this floor is going to be on this deal, Sammy Watkins. When Sammy Watkins signs a deal at $16 million per, yeah. You're Tyreek Hill, you know, I definitely can't go lower than that. And then when you look at the top of the market, Odell Beckham Jr. is at the top at $18 million. So where does Tyreek Hill slot into that? And so I think we're looking at a situation where Tyreek Hill is going to set the new standard for pay and compensation at the wide receiver position because, one, he has outstanding production on the field. He is an explosive and super dynamic player in a variety of different ways. And the way the market has been established in Kansas City and beyond, I mean, I think we're looking at a guy that's going to get about $19 million or so per year. And the wide receiver market is going to change because you got Julio Jones coming up. You have A.J. Green. You have other guys that are coming up. We may finally see the wide receiver market kind of inch closer to the $20 million mark.
Yeah, going back and looking at my notes on Tyreek Hill coming out of college. Now, coming out of West Alabama, people knew about the issues he'd had off the field. Now, that caused him to drop. If not for those issues, he'd have gone much higher. He was a kickoff returner. He was a slot back. He was a punt returner. And I've written in my notes, huge burst, elusive, multiple punt return TDs. Percy Harvin, that was kind of the comparison with him. Now, think about Percy Harvin, where the expectations were. You saw some flashes, but never emerged as a pure wide receiver. He had some kickoff return success, obviously go to the Super Bowl, and you can see that. But this kid has taken all that raw ability and translated it not only to being just kind of an explosive player, but has become a very skilled route runner and the most he's the most dangerous man in football on the outside. I mean, it is instant death with him if he catches the ball. You hold your breath every time it goes to him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's terrific with the ball in his hands. I mean, he is a touchdown waiting to happen. He can do it in a variety of ways, be it off the fly sweeps, the screens, his ability to take the top off the defense going down the field. And then he is playing with a quarterback that really allows him to play to his strengths. And so you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you're looking at him really not even as a wide receiver. You're looking at him as the ultimate offensive weapon. And so he is worthy of being in that conversation. I never thought that he would be this kind of player when we first saw him. We saw the dynamic skills as a returner. We saw them try and kind of put him on the field. I never thought that he would kind of grow from being maybe a number three wide receiver to being a number one that you really have to take seriously as an elite or premier pass catcher on the outside.
All right, let's get to this Antonio Brown news because the Steelers have come out and said, give us your best offer. This is going to go down Friday. So, you know, look, it's their own deadline artificially put in there, and that's usually made to try and get everybody to bring their best to the table in terms of trying to get something done here. Now, it's been reported that the three teams that are remaining, Oakland, Tennessee, and Washington, those are the three teams. The Jets are reportedly out. The Arizona Cardinals are reportedly out. So, of those three teams, Washington, Tennessee, Oakland, where do you think the best fit is? Where does he go, Buck?
I think he goes to the Washington Redskins because Daniel Snyder cannot resist playing Madden.
He loves toys.
He can't resist playing Madden, and the Redskins have nothing on the outside. Like, I mean, we can talk about some of the guys. They took Josh Dotson a couple years ago, but they have nothing in terms of number one. So Antonio Brown can get all of the balls if they can find someone who can throw it to him. But yeah. he can get all that. You know, with the Raiders – I worry
That's
about the
my
relationship.
Pick, by the way. That's my pick.
Man.
You want to know why? First of all, they have so much draft capital. They can make a better offer than the Washington Redskins are not going to give up the 15th pick. And then you look at the Raiders. They have a pick early in the second round, right? They have three first-round picks, including two late ones. So even if they want to outbid somebody, they can do it because they could talk themselves into saying, look, even if we trade, pick 28, if we trade pick 27, 28, whatever that number is, they could recoup that by trading back with one of their other two first-round picks. Probably not the first one, but that second one, that middle first-round pick. You can trade back. You're going to get some extra picks. You already got pick 35. I mean, they're going to have tons of picks. And the other thing is, you parted ways with Khalil Mack. So to have traded Khalil Mack, a name brand, you know, top two player on defensive side of the ball in the league, to have something to show for that, to me, you go get Antonio Brown, we can still make the case the best wide receiver in the NFL. If not the best, he is in the conversation. He's in the top five for sure, even at this age. So now you've got something to show for a trade that was universally criticized, Buck.
Yeah, you do have something for sure. They do need star power, and they also need a playmaker. I can personally attest to watching John Gruden do a great job of creating opportunities for receivers to catch the ball. He did it in Oakland when he had Jerry Rice and Tim Brown. They were on the backside of his career.
Yep.
He is getting Antonio Brown still in his prime. He certainly can create opportunities. Remember, he helped Joey Galloway have phenomenal numbers in Tampa when he got a hold of him. And so he certainly can do it. They do need some star power on the outside. And then when you think about this move in broader strokes, they're playing another year in Oakland before they move into Vegas. When you come to Vegas, you need to come with some stars. It's not a bigger star at wide receiver than Odell Beckham Jr. than A.B. A.B. certainly can put some butts in seats while also scoring touchdowns. Maybe it's a good fit. The only reason I went with the Washington Redskins, we've seen this happen too often with Daniel Snyder. He can't resist. He can't resist a talented player. But you're right, the Oakland Raiders have a lot of capital. The thing about it, with the Pittsburgh Steelers really be willing to trade him into the AFC?
Yeah. No, it's I just don't know that they necessarily view the Oakland Raiders, at least in the short term, as a threat. And by the time they might be a threat, Antonio Brown could be on the back end. That's why
long
I can see that
happen. I see it.
And
I get it.
And they've made, I want to say, they made the Martavis Bryant trade together. They made the Ryan Switzer trade together, both these organizations. So this would be the third wide receiver trade they'd have made in the last couple of years. So they do have a relationship there. I don't know. That's the team that makes the most sense to me. And then Tennessee, the third team in the mix. Look, they've got to get more explosive. I like Corey Davis. You love Delanie Walker. He stays healthy. They've proven they can power the ball in the run game with Derrick Henry. But they need some more explosive weapons. And to me, that's why you could see that being a match there with them. I just don't know where they fit in terms of what they would give up if they'd have enough. If Oakland wants them, they're going to get them because they can outbid everybody.
They absolutely can outbid everybody. It's just a matter of do they really want it. If this was a game of spades, if they dropped a big joker, they're going to claim all the books. So they can get AB if they want him. It's just a matter of how much do they want to give up to get him. But the way that you talked about really manipulating the picks that they have in the first round, they certainly can get back whatever they gave up. Like just by trading back and doing some things, they can do it. The one thing that has to happen for the Raiders out of this draft, they have to make up for the star power that they lost.
They
have to
make up. They need some blue players.
Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack, they have to be able to get those guys replaced.
And if you think about it, if they are picking where they are in the top of the first round, Buck, and they come away with a Josh Allen and Nick Bosa, you've got your edge rusher. You can say, okay, that explains the Mack part of it. And then if you were able to acquire Antonio Brown via trade, then you've swapped out. Then it doesn't look as bad. If you end up with Nick Bosa combined with Antonio Brown and you gave up Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, like you can have that conversation. You know what I mean? Like, okay, Khalil Mack is going to be a little bit better than Nick Bosa, but Nick Bosa is younger, cheaper. And then you look at Antonio Brown, I'd argue he's a better player than Amari Cooper. So then you kind of make some sense of all that.
It's not much of an argument.
He's been the best in the league. So I know Amari Cooper is younger. But nonetheless, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. All right, I know we have something down here on the franchise tag, Buck. I say we kind of roll through that.
We'll punt on that. Let's get right to your mock draft. Mock draft
jump through it.
2.0 right after the combine. Like, man, you had to do this like on the plane. The plane leaving Indianapolis.
I mean, crank that thing out. Got to get it out. People love their mock drafts. A universal praise, by the way. Not a bad word said, of course.
I mean, let's.
What do you think? Go through it. Just tell me what you think.
So I'm going through your top five: Murray, Bosa, Williams, Allen, and Sweat. And the thing that stands out, I think the first four, I think we're numb to. I think we kind of expect Kyler Murray to go one, Bosa go after that, Williams going to the Jets. I think it's terrific. Josh Allen with the Raiders. They need an edge rusher. But at five, Montez Sweat going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Please explain yourself.
Tampa getting another edge rusher. You know, last year. We saw them go out and pick up Jason Pierre-Paul. Get him another one. This defense needs more difference makers. You want to help out a young secondary, you go hunt the quarterback. And to me, you put him in there. Vita Vea started to come on a little bit at the end of the year last year. Now you've got a chance to have a dynamic defensive line. He could play. Look, you can stand him up. You put his hand on the ground. Obviously, show with his athleticism, he's a freak. So to me, getting a difference maker up front that can hunt the quarterback, that's why I go Montez Sweat. And ironically, even body type-wise, a little bit. You go back to Simeon Rice when he was there, Buck. Body type-wise, you can see some of those same body type and burst, I should say. You see some similarities there.
Yeah, I mean, you can see him come off the edge. Like he would be terrific pairing opposite of JPP. The issue that they have is, depending on what they do with Gerald McCoy, if they retain him, if they don't retain him.
It sounds like he's going to come back.
So if they keep him inside, like this would really give them two legitimate rushers. And the thing that I like about Montez Sweat is not only the athleticism that he displayed at the combine, but I think he plays hard. And I think his motor and effort is going to give him a chance to be a double-digit sack artist opposite JPP. So I actually like the pick. I just want to hear you explain it.
Yeah, there you go. No, and look, Gerald McCoy is not what he was.
He's
put
still
JPP
a good
out yeah. there and Montez Sweat, and you get Vita Vea who can occupy some blockers, and now you now you're cooking with gas.
Yeah. So okay. So let's finish out the top ten. We got Haskins, Juwan Taylor, Rashawn Gary going to the Detroit Lions, DK Metcalf going to the Buffalo Bills, and Andre Dillard to the Denver Broncos. And I think
Let me just touch on the Dillard. I want to touch on the Dillard thing real quick there because I know Garrett Bowles has been a first-round pick. Garrett Bowles has not played well.
Nope.
To me, I would kick Bowles over to the right side and Andre Dillard's your left tackle. That's what I would do.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, Garrett Bowles, I can't remember what pick exactly he was taken on, but he was a little overdrafted. There was a reach there because there were some concerns, remember, when he came out about his strength. Because when we watched him on tape, there were some times where he didn't overwhelm edge rushers on the perimeter. And then so he was the 20th pick overall. And so you worried about that. And then the athleticism, we like the athleticism, but you just worried about it. So now maybe if we kick him over to the right side, he has a better deal because maybe he's not facing the premier guys week after week. And then Andre Dillard, we know, is a dancing bear. And for the system that they're putting in, that zone blocking scheme, they fit. So it should be a better deal. Mike Munchak is going to do a great job of kind of rebuilding this offensive line. And so maybe he is a really good fit at 10.
All right, let's go through the rest of it here, Buck. Just go through, pull out a couple. Give you two more names there that and I can be put on the stand and defend myself here.
The Atlanta Falcons at 14 take Burns. Brandon Burns from Florida State. We got to talk about this. Why
yeah,
Burns?
Sure. It's kind of ironic because Brian Burns, when I watched him trying to figure out, okay, who does he remind you of here?
Vic Beasley?
Vic Beasley.
He reminds you of Vic Beasley?
So people have a type, right? We always say executives have a type. And so he kind of fits that as somebody with some big-time speed playing inside in that dome and inside that division. I think you can make some sense of that. Now, my question with him, same with Beasley when he was coming through college, how much is he going to weigh? We heard he played in the 220s. He shows up. He's put on a ton of good weight and carried it really well. He had a phenomenal workout. There, as did Vic Beasley back in the day. Now, I know Vic Beasley's been inconsistent for the Atlanta Falcons, Buck. This kid is intriguing, though. And to me, you get another fastball to come off the edge. Tack McKinley, I think he had, seven sacks last year.
Yep.
You've got something to work with there. And Beasley, who's been a little underwhelming, I think you feel like you could have upgraded over Vic Beasley here with Brian Burns, a little newer, better version.
Yeah, I mean, look, they want to – and talking to Thomas Dimitroff at the combine, they talked about wanting urgent athletes, guys that are explosive, fast. They kind of play like their hair is on fire. Burns shows that ability. And, look, he was impressive at the combine in terms of being a little heavier but still putting down good times. When you think about the Atlanta Falcons and Dan Quinn taking over this defense, we saw what he was able to do with Bruce Irvin when he had him in Seattle. I think this is an intriguing pick because it certainly fits the prototypes and how they typically like to play their guys. One other guy that I have to talk about, I'm going to go all the way down to your former squad because I always feel like you have your ear to the street when we talk about the Baltimore Ravens, Paris Campbell at Baltimore.
This is something we've talked about on the pod, right? How do you build this team around Lamar Jackson? And we've said you build a track team around Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
Because you think about it, the way you're going to be able to run the ball, they have all these tight ends you're going to put out there. You're going to see a lot of one-on-one. You're going to see a lot of single high safety, Buck. People are going to designate so many resources to stop the run, so make them pay for it. When you throw the football, make them pay for it down the field. You want to commit all those resources. Paris Campbell can get over the top of you. We can hit some home runs. We're not going to need to have 4 and 5 third down conversions on a drive to score. We're going to pound you, boom. And the other thing with Paris Campbell, all that run stuff, He's your reverse guy. He's your shovel
guy.
He can do all that stuff.
Because we're gonna see a lot of teams look at the Rams this offseason, and more teams are going to take what the Rams were able to successfully do, the fly sweep game and all that other stuff. You pointed out the stat that wide receivers amassed maybe 420-plus rushing attempts this year. Well, you can guarantee that that's going to go up because the one thing that everyone in the league does, they study everybody, and they're going to take the most popular things and the most productive things and add them to the mix. This is really what I think a perfect pick for them because not only do you have the guy that can take the top off the defense, but now when you think about the fly sweep and the misdirection stuff that Baltimore did use when Greg Roman was kind of helping out with the offense, but now you know they'll take it to the next level. Paris Campbell could be a factor, a difference maker, could be an offensive weapon more so than just a wide receiver. Yeah, I like that pick.
All right, Kent wants to jump in here. Kent, you got one? You got a question?
Yeah, I have one guy that he's not on the list, but he was an injury guy and wouldn't have been allowed at the combine. Jeffrey Simmons. I just look at his talent. I know you mentioned a few weeks ago he's a guy that character-wise, everything checked out when you talk to Mississippi State people. Why is he a guy that might slip to the second round now? Is it just the injury?
So here's the thing. He is a top five player in this draft, no question, when you look at the talent. Two different things. Number one, the depth of defensive line talent is so great that teams are going to have a hard time. And no, you have to sell us. Even if you have all that information that I mentioned about Jeffrey Simmons, you're going to have to go through ownership to make that, because there's a video out there that exists. As soon as you get picked, that's going to pop up. You're going to have to deal with that. So teams are looking at this saying, there's too many other really good players. Now, Jeffrey Simmons might be a little bit better. If Jeffrey Simmons was healthy, he'd be a top 10 pick. But now you're going to have to redshirt a guy for a year coming off of an ACL, and you're going to have to deal with some of the blowback for what took place with him in high school. And teams are saying, you know what, there's other good options. I'm just going to take these other good options right here. And the third factor I would say is teams have done their homework on this. When you go back and look at the players that have had to redshirt their first year, missed that entire year, the hit rate is very, very low. Even on guys you think were great players, and we got a tremendous value because he slipped because he was hurt. Sidney Jones would be probably the latest example, who did not play that well last year, who was somebody we thought, Buck, was a top 10, top 15 type pick coming out of Washington.
Yeah,
didn't play well last year. So there's all those different factors that weigh into it. That being said, would I be shocked if he was picked in the first round? No, his talent is tremendous. But just know you're going to have to redshirt a player, and you're going to have to deal with some blowback. So that's why I had him sliding out.
Yeah, you're trying to mitigate risk. I think that's the big thing. You're trying to mitigate risk. One, you have the injury risk, and then you have the character situation that you vet out, despite all of the positive things that you'll get back from the people from Mississippi State. It's one of those issues that you have to deal with, because you're right. When you take him and you bring him up for that initial presser, that is something that you have to deal with. And the one thing that we know from dealing with owners don't like distractions and uncomfortable situations, particularly at those opening pressers. And so it's something that you have to account for.
No doubt. All right. Buck, you had a chance at the Combine to speak to one of the rising stars in the coaching profession. He's the new head coach at Ohio State University, one of the premier programs in the country, taking over for Urban Meyer. And somebody's been around Chip Kelly, very interesting background, and someone that knows one of the top players in the draft as well as anyone, especially other players. I don't even want to say just a quarterback. I mean, this Ohio State team, we seemed like every 5 seconds there was another Ohio State player stepping up to the line and ripping off a 4-3-40, an incredible, incredible group of prospects in this year's draft class. But you're going to really enjoy listening to this conversation between Bucky and Ohio State head coach Ryan Day.
So excited to have Ohio State head coach Ryan Day. Coach, how is everything going since officially being named a head coach?
It's going great. It's going great. You know, we hit the ground running recruiting. That was the big part of it. You know, early on was making sure we got out there and did a great job recruiting. And then, should we start on Wednesday? And we're rolling for spring ball, so it's right around the corner. We feel like we just played in the Rose Bowl, and now we're back into spring practice.
How are things different for you now that you are the head coach, even though you're still calling plays and doing things? But now that you're officially in that capacity, how much will things change for you in the fall?
Yeah, just a lot more involved with the whole operation. You know, recruiting's different. Involved with everything that's going on, the motivation of the team, the philosophy, day in and day out, special teams, and, you know, keeping an eye on what's going on, defense, offense, and just overall strength and conditioning. You know, Mickey Moriarty does an unbelievable job with that, but overall just running the whole operation.
You have a unique background and really a unique perspective on how the game is trending. Having played under Chip Kelly at New Hampshire, having worked with him at a few different spots, what are you seeing in terms of the way the game is changing, not only collegiate level, but the way it's also changed at the NFL level?
Yeah, it is. It's changing every day. I think the thing you see is a lot of things that are in college going up into the NFL right now. And I think, in my opinion, when you kind of watch what we did on offense this year, it's kind of where it's going. So, you know, in the run game, a lot of spread concepts. I think that, you know, guys are so big and strong nowadays that you need space. You know, I think about what the Warriors did with Steph Curry. You know, they had to create space on that court. It's the same thing in the NFL. It's the same thing in college. They need space. The guys are so big, strong, and fast now. And so we want to do that in the run game, you know, create space, make guys play sideline to sideline. And then, you know, in the passing game, you know, a lot of pro concepts where, you know, they're time-tested, not things that are just kind of drawn up week to week, but plays over and over again that the guys have run, have confidence in.
So your background as a quarterback, we're seeing that so much of the game really centers around the quarterback. What is the challenge in getting young quarterbacks ready to play, even at the college level and maybe at the NFL level?
It takes time, you know, and I think when you see kind of like the way that Dwayne came on this year, so much of that was done leading up to the season. Understanding of protections, it's such a huge part of being a quarterback nowadays, is understanding what's going on up front. Not only the confidence, but the ability to, get the line to protect for you, understand where the defense is trying to attack you, but then also defensive structure, understanding how to attack coverages, understanding how your footwork times up with the progressions. All those things come into play, and I think that, now quarterbacks are coming more and more prepared into college and into the NFL, but still so much work to be done in the classroom.
What makes Dwayne Haskins such a special player?
First off, he has a special talent. His innate accuracy is some of the best I've ever been around. I had a chance to be around Matt Ryan when he was at this age, and very similar that way. The anticipation, the touch, has a great feel for what's going on in front of him. Also has really embraced the classroom, understands, again, like we're talking protections, defensive structure, what's going on in front of him. Thought he did a really good job this year with that, especially late in the season with some of our games where he took control of what was going on up front. But he has a special spirit about him. He doesn't get rattled. He stays pretty even keeled, and nothing's too big for him.
When you think about the stage being big, obviously you've been around NFL quarterbacks, and they have to perform in pressurized environments. How do you think he will perform when he has an opportunity to be a franchise quarterback?
I think he'll do great. I think that it's not going to happen overnight. Dwayne hasn't played a whole lot of football. So every time he's doing something, it'll be for the first time in the NFL. So I think every time he plays, he'll be learning. We talked about it all the time. You either win or you learn. You don't fail. And I think he's going to take that approach when he's in the NFL.
In thinking about young quarterbacks and continuing to develop them, what would you say is the one thing that you absolutely love about him and what a franchise will love about him when they begin to really dig down deep and meet him?
I would say overall, his overall spirit. He's got a great spirit about him. He's been raised the right way. His heart's in the right place. He cares about the people around him, and he wants to be great. I think he's been working his whole life for this opportunity, and he's going to make sure he wills himself to be successful. And it's not going to happen overnight. He understands that, but during that journey, he's going to bring a lot of people with him.
So you've also had a bunch of other good players that have played for you under Ohio State, and you may have the number one player in the draft in Nick Bosa. What makes Nick Bosa different than some of the other guys that have been around?
Well, going up against him every single day when we were on offense, it was hard. He was hard to block. He ruined practice all the time. Had a hard time blocking him, and especially third down drill and things like that. Very, very explosive and quick. But I think the thing that Larry Johnson, our defensive line coach, did a great job of is he really went back and watched the film. And I think he said on the 500th clip, he found something last year to get him a little bit better. And that's the way Nick is. He wants to get better. He knows he's very good. He knows he's one of the best in the game, but he keeps working to become great.
He has obviously had a terrific career at Ohio State, but he's playing kind of in the shadows of his older brother, Joey. How do you think he is motivated by the fact that this is the family business? Everyone ahead of him has been a first-round pick. How do you think that kind of plays into and taps into the motivation that he displays on the field?
I think it gives him confidence. I feel like I don't think he puts pressure on himself to do anything else that some of his family members have done. I think it gives him confidence that he knows it can be done. And he's his own person. When you get around him, you see that he's got his own way about him, and he's comfortable in his own skin.
So obviously, this being your first full season at Ohio State, what are some of the expectations that you have for your team heading forward?
Well, the first expectation is to play really, really hard. We want to make sure that every game that we're going, we call 4-6 A to B, and we're going as hard as we can so that at the end of the game, you played Ohio State. That's the biggest thing. We want to play with a lot of energy. And the thing that we're really trying to do right now is when the guys walk into the building to when they leave, tons of energy, a lot of excitement around the program, and we want to win championships.
Well, we're looking forward to watching you lead the Buckeyes going forward and beyond. We're excited to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, Buck, I think you can take a lot from that conversation, and thank you for hustling like crazy down there and grabbing all these interviews. We're going to have more coming your way. But in this one, to me, jumps out to me is just the intelligence. When you hear about the intelligence of Dwayne Haskins, and you can really tell Coach Dave believes in him and what he can become.
Yeah, he believes in him, and he thinks that he can do so many things when he gets to the next level. He thinks he's going to be a guy that can really take his game to the next level with even more time to really prepare and to dig into it. And I think the other stuff that you talked about, all of his Ohio State kids and how those guys have been able to perform on the major stage, having conversations with him outside of the interview, like he's just really, really proud of what those kids have been able to achieve. He likes the fact that they've been able to work and that they perform well. And so I'm excited to see these Ohio State guys continue to populate the NFL, and I'm excited to see what Ryan Day does in his first full season as a head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes.
No doubt. We've got a ton more interviews. Kent, hop on here. I know a bunch of these interviews, I believe, are already up. Is that NFL.com/MTS video? Where can everybody find these other interviews we got from the Combine?
Yeah, if you go to NFL.com/MTS video, we put up probably close to maybe 15 interviews so far over from the weekend into early this week. We talked to Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, A.J. Brown, Calvin Harmon, Andre Diller, Juwan Taylor, Cody Ford, all four of the Clemson D linemen, and Jerry Tillery. So we got a lot of interviews, maybe even like I was kind of counting myself. We could have as many as 8 or 9 first-round picks that we were able to get with Move the Sticks. So, yeah, it was a busy week, but they're all up. We're starting to filter them out on NFL.com. A few were on social, Twitter, IG, and everywhere else. And then we'll continue to put them out here over the course of the next few days and then start airing some of these interviews on our next show, which will air, will be out Friday at midnight, and then into next week, we'll keep dropping these interviews on the show.
No doubt. And we've got, we've already begun. We'll use some of this information we gathered at the Combine, as well as some of the stuff we've been doing on the side here, to work on our 360 series, which I know everybody enjoys that. We'll be back this year as well. We look at some of the top players and going back, talking to their high school coaches, teammates, you name it. We do a full workup on some of the top guys in the draft. So that'll be coming your way in just a little bit. Buck, we've got a tremendous amount of content coming your way. Do we know, I know it's a little bit early in the week here, do we know what's coming in the Bucky Brooks notebook this week? What's ahead?
Well, we're working on it. So we're working on discussing Josh Rosen and Josh Rosen's value. So what I'm going to do is dig down into tape, just kind of give my assessment on that, talk to some guys, give their take on where they think he would fetch back on the open market.
All right. Well, the next time we convene, we can discuss how I guess right about the Oakland Raiders picking up Antonio Brown. We can revisit that. Now the Redskins will trade 2 ones. Just you know, that's always on the table. That's always on the table.
Always on the table. Always on the table.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Kent for hustling like crazy. Mark Brady was down there, big boss down there hustling as well. Bucky did a phenomenal job at the Combine. I cannot wait to continue these conversations as we go towards the 2019 NFL Draft. We have all your draft needs covered right here on the Move the Sticks podcast. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.